Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 23rd of April. We're going to be talking about the industrial chemical melamine linked to kidney failure in dogs and cats, and there is news on this front on several levels. California officials quarantined 1,500 animals at the American Hog Farm, tracking now who purchased 100 hogs from the farm in April when animals were eating pet food that had been tainted with melamine. U.S. House of Representatives subcommittee tomorrow will examine the Food and Drug Administration's diminished capacity to assure food safety in America. The representative from Connecticut, Rosa DeLaura, said that the FDA assured us that the concerns about the pet food supply was a separate issue and that the human food supply would not be threatened, which seems not to be the case. And there is now, then we heard, of course, last week that the chemical melamine is believed to have contaminated rice protein concentrate, which is used to make a variety of pet foods, and that it was also added to corn, and animals have died in South Africa where this was shipped to from China. There has been some talk that spiking food with melamine elevates measured protein levels, making the food worth more. So this may suggest the contamination was deliberate, but the intent was not to kill animals. The renal toxicity of melamine appears to be a new discovery. The intent was fraud. And then you have this difficulty of getting into China to examine what's going on here and the hearings that have taken place. So it remains a very big story and a growing story, and we're happy to talk about it. We're not happy to talk about it, but we're going to address it. We wish there were better news, but we're going to address this subject with two guests this hour. Professor Stephen Hooser is with us, first half hour, and he is associate professor of toxicology, head of the toxicology section, and assistant director of the Animal Disease Diagnostic Laboratory at Purdue University. Also, this is all in the School of Veterinary Medicine. A little bit later, we will be speaking with the director of education for an animal emergency center here in the city of Milwaukee. We'll be welcoming phone calls all hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050 for you to join our conversation. Professor Stephen Hooser, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen. Yeah. Good to be here.
Can you tell me, first of all, what is this industrial chemical, melamine? What is it used for?
Melamine is a man-made chemical that is used to make melamine plastics. If you link a whole bunch of melamines together, it can be used to make plastics. It's also, since it's got a lot of nitrogen in it, apparently it can be used as fertilizer also.
Hmm. And the purpose of adding it to feed for dogs and cats would be what?
Well, normally there would be, I don't know of any normal usage to put it in cat and dog feeds. As you have, I've also read that since it has a lot of nitrogen in it, it may have been intentionally added to some foods to increase the apparent amount of protein that's in it and make it more valuable.
And this would not be something that, well, nobody knew the effect that it would have on dogs and cats, but the motive was to make more money, right?
That is what I read in my assumption, too, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this is being done in China?
That's what I read also, yes, that may have been there. That's where it's been found anyway.
Uh-huh. And we're finding it in rice, in corn, and in wheat now.
Yes, apparently so. Here in the United States, it was first found in the wheat gluten, and then more recently in rice gluten. And then apparently there have been a whole lot of pets in South Africa that have died of kidney damage also, and there they found it in corn gluten.
Mm-hmm. So is this something recent? Are we just starting to get this kind of food product for cats and dogs from China? Because this is new on the scene, right? Or did they just start adding melamine or what?
Well, that's a very good question, and I really don't know the answer to that. I don't know how long the United States has been importing wheat gluten from China. Certainly, this is the first that anyone's been aware of a problem in any kind of food with melamine in the food being associated with severe kidney damage.
Right.
Yeah.
And tell me, Would we have known what the effect would be on pets or on human beings if we were to put this in our food, or has that not been tested?
Not really been tested. The only thing that I have seen is that there was a study done about 60 years ago, one time, where people were looking at the effects of melamine. I believe it was as a potential for a drug back in the 40s, where they did test it. Some, and at that time, they really didn't find any evidence of kidney damage. And as far as I know, that's only been the only time it's really been tested. Otherwise, there had never been a need because it's never been found in food before or been thought to be used for food.
Mm-hmm. It was tested on dog and cat food 60 years ago or on what?
No. As I recall, 60 years ago, it was tested mostly in dogs, rabbits, and a few cats. People were wondering whether or not it would be useful as a drug for blood pressure, a type of blood pressure medication, as I recall. Though I don't remember the exact usage, but it was tested at that time in dogs, rabbits, and a few cats 60 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea how much of the dog and cat food in this country is coming from places that don't regulate it very well at all, like China?
Well, apparently, in this latest food recall, I think it's somewhere on the order of, 60 million cans? 60
wow.
million cans and bags of the product. So that's a lot, apparently.
Mm-hmm. And then there was news now that we've discovered that it's found its way into hogs at the American Hog Farm in California. So it's into the human food chain now, too.
Apparently so. In California, and we don't know yet if it's other places or not, but apparently in California, some of the product, the dog food or something that had been contaminated, found its way into pig feed. And then some of those pigs were sold for human consumption, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So unfortunate.
Yeah. When you hear this story, considering the line of work that you're in, what's your immediate reaction? What needs to be done to make sure that our cats and dogs, and maybe even ourselves, who knows where this story is going, will not be eating food that's contaminated with some chemical like this?
Well, certainly I would think that oversight of the manufacturing plants would be very important for something like this. This chemical melamine, nobody would have tested for anyway in foods.
Hmm.
I mean, so it would be very difficult, it would be impossible to test for every possible chemical that could find its way into animal or human foods. But certainly, if we have oversight and inspections of production facilities like we do here in the United States, that goes a long way to helping prevent accidental or intentional contamination of foods.
Mm-hmm. Evidently, it's been very hard, according to Senator Durbin from Illinois, it's been very hard to get permission to get into China to look at these factories. I don't know what the problem is. The visa thing, they won't let you in. There's a problem with the visa. Or I don't know if people are in there investigating right now, but I'm wondering if we've cut off all imports of this kind of food now from China or not.
Last I read, certainly the imports from the specific companies involved in China, those have been suspended. And for instance, if something like this were to happen in the United States, I mean, every state has a feed control organization that's affiliated with the American Association of Feed Control Officials and the FDA and USDA. And so if there's any kind of suspicion of food contamination here in the U.S., I mean, they will send inspectors out to the feed mills to go through all of their records and all of the commodities and things that they've gotten into the feed mill. They test routinely to make sure that the feeds have the ingredients they're supposed to have in them.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be what we do here. And like you said, I mean, it's very difficult, apparently, to get into a foreign country to do those similar kinds of inspections.
One of the companies that makes dog food, and I guess that they were tainted by this, is what's the name of it? Blue Buffalo Company of Wilton, Connecticut, said they were stunned to learn that its pet food contained the tainted rice protein concentrate. They will now demand that if its American suppliers must use imports, they will choose trusted countries like Australia, Canada, and New Zealand, and the European Union nations, which have more rigorous standards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hadn't read that specifically, but certainly greater oversight is needed to prevent this from happening in the future.
Mm-hmm. Right. Do you have a sense that we're on that road to greater oversight or not?
I'm fairly sure that the economics of this will force suppliers, like from China perhaps, to have and to allow greater oversight.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the imports from those companies have been suspended, and I'm sure they don't want that to happen again.
Right. So little is known, I've read, tell me why this is the case, about melamine, that it remains unclear why the hogs that ate the tainted food survived, merely excreting the chemical in their urine, while cats and dogs died from kidney failure.
Oh, well, it may very well be due to a couple of things. I mean, one would be, is it could just be the amount of dose, because the amount of melamine in the pig feed, I mean, first, the melamine getting into the pet food would have been diluted out a lot, just getting into the pet food. Then when you combine that and mix that in with a total swine feed, it would be diluted even more.
Mm.
So I imagine that the pigs probably got a smaller dose.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, there's a lot of difference between different species of animals, and different species don't respond the same. And so certainly there are some chemicals and some plants that only cause kidney damage in cats, for instance. I mean, like cats that eat lilies, they can die of acute renal failure. Cats exposed to other plants, other chemicals, could die of renal failure. There are some chemicals that cause renal failure in everything that eats them, like antifreeze. You would have renal failure in dogs and cats and pigs.
Mm-hmm.
But things like melamine perhaps could be dose, and it could just be individual species responses to the chemical.
Mm-hmm. And can you give me a better idea, Professor Hooser, of the kind of regulation that exists now, how lax it might be, how strong it might be, of pet food in this country? How do we know what goes into the food? How do we know whether or not other chemicals may have been added? Who's looking out for the dogs and the cats?
Well, at the highest level, I think the FDA, Center for Veterinary Medicine, has oversight of some of these, but they work closely with each state, and each state has officials of the American Association of Feed Control officials. And say, for instance, here in Indiana, it's at the Indiana Office of the State Chemist, and they've been given the task, and have for over 100 years in Indiana, of making sure that animal feeds have in them what they're supposed to have in them. So, for instance, if the label says that it's supposed to have certain ingredients and X amount of protein and vitamin D or something, they test to make sure that that stuff is in there and what's on the label says that it's on the, what the label says is actually in there.
Mm-hmm.
If there are any suspicions, like, for instance, if I get a call from some horse owner and they suspect that there is a contaminant in their feed, their horse got sick, then the person you would call to test here would be the Office of the State Chemist. And then they have official inspectors. They go out to the feed mills. They inspect it. They see if there's any cross-contamination. They check to see what all of the ingredients are that go in there.
Hmm.
And that would be the group that would do that. And my understanding is there's someone like that in every state.
Mm-hmm. And do they get called very often? Do you know?
I don't, you know, I really do not know the numbers on there.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that come through me, I mean, it's a couple times a year, really,
huh,
where there's some suspicion of it.
Yeah. Let's welcome phone calls. We're talking this part of the program with Professor Stephen Hooser, Associate Professor of Toxicology, Head of the Toxicology Section, and Assistant Director of the Animal Disease Diagnostic Laboratory at Purdue University in the School of Veterinary Medicine. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 227-2050. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, the safety of food for dogs and cats, this story is growing, and we're talking about it this hour of the program, and welcoming your phone calls to you in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We start our phone calls now, and John in Madison is our first caller. Hi, John.
Hi. Well, I've got two questions for you. One, are the Chinese going to be susceptible to some kind of international lawsuit, as certainly our companies would have been if they had done something like this and it affected some other country? My second question is, You said that the state regulatory agencies check to make sure that everything listed in the feed is indeed there in the quantities they say. But, you know, this melamine was extremely difficult to isolate. With you know, it took almost a month for them to find out what was going on. And my concern and everybody else's is, are these feed manufacturers sufficiently regulated? In other words, if they add a chemical, do they have to stipulate that chemical on the label, or do they have to tell someone? And does there have to be some proven safety testing being done on these chemicals?
Well, certainly your first question, whether or not it's going to be a lawsuit, I really can't answer that at all. I'm not with the FDA or with the Center for Veterinary Medicine, so I really don't know on that. The second one, I am not a member of the State Chemist's Office either, but my understanding is that if chemicals are added to feeds, that yes, the manufacturers would need to say that, because anything that goes into the feed needs to be on the label. Whether or not testing has to be done, I don't know the actual amounts and the laws that are on that, but certainly if there are things that are commonly used and that are recognized that they're supposed to be in the feed, then I doubt if there's a whole lot of extra testing that's done for that.
Yeah, well, you know, my concern is I've heard estimates that 10,000 new chemicals come out every year, and a significant percentage find their way into not necessarily human consumption, but human use. But a very small percentage of these have had any kind of safety testing done. That's the only reason I brought this up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sure. I mean, there are lots and lots of chemicals out there, and there are so many that it really becomes impossible to test all of them. And so that's a problem.
Yeah. Thanks very much for your call. And then who looks after, if you've got food coming from China and from all these countries all over the world, is there an international standard here in terms of what can be added, what's off limits completely, or how in the world can that be regulated?
Oh, that's a very good question. And I don't know the specific answer to that, and I would hazard to guess that as we're seeing here, it is very, very difficult to regulate that. Because, again, you know, one cannot test for everything. There are so many chemicals that are out there and in the environment that it's nearly impossible to test for everything. And certainly in the past, I mean, if we look historically at how these kind of food contaminations happen, mm-hmm. they often happen by accident because you have a company that's making different chemicals and they're turns out there's an accident. I mean, they have everything in a maybe packaged in a similar kind of brown bag with a name stenciled on it. And somebody every once in a while picks up the wrong bag and puts it in. And so that you'll have a contamination due to that. Sometimes it's cross-contamination using similar equipment to mix feeds for different species.
Mm-hmm.
And you have different species of animals have different susceptibilities to different chemicals. And so sometimes it's just a cross-contamination problem. So it is very, very difficult to actually test for and police all of these various different possibilities.
Mm-hmm. Jody is next from Madison. Hi, Jody.
Hi. I'm a veterinarian, and I was calling because I just read in the Journal for the American Veterinary Medical Association that Menu Foods, which was one of the first food places that found the contamination in their foods, had never been inspected. The facility had never been inspected before. And I just have one other comment, and the other one was that we had a terrible contamination in this state not too long ago where some cow growth promotants were put into horse feed and killed a whole bunch of horses. So It certainly does happen here.
Yeah. And Menu Foods is manufactured where? Does anybody know?
It's in Kansas.
It's in Kansas and has never been in...
I could be wrong, but it was in that general area.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I read a similar article. And, I mean, it said that the FDA, I think, at the governmental level, had not inspected that plant. And it could be, too, that, I mean, I don't know if the state of Kansas inspected the plant also. Here in Indiana, I don't know just how frequently inspections of feed mills go on, whether they are routine or if they are just in response to a complaint. So that I really don't have a whole lot of information on. I mean, and certainly you're right with the cross-contamination. I mean, that particular type of instance that you said, where the chemical, the growth promotant in cattle feed, then gets into horse feed because they don't clean out the mixers really well in between mixing the feed. That happens on a fairly regular basis. Well, not regular basis, but it happens every once in a while. Certainly does.
Hmm. Well, somebody's got to step up to the plate here and make sure these places are regulated, because we're seeing it with the human food supply, you know, with the E. coli outbreaks, and now with the melamine. It would seem to me as though it's the responsibility of Congress, or, well, who else is going to do it? Congress, to make sure that these places are regulated, or we'll lose faith in the food supply for our animals and for ourselves.
Which ultimately our animal food supply gets into the human food supply too. So, yes,
right.
I agree. That's a significant problem that needs to be addressed.
Thanks very much for the call. Let's go to Luba next from Madison. Hi, Luba.
Hi. I was curious about corn gluten used on lawns. Now, I have a cat. Can one assume that putting corn gluten on lawns would be not very safe for cats?
I didn't know it was used on lawns. Oh, it's in fertilizer, huh?
No, it's used to keep down, it prevents the germination of seeds.
Ah.
So that if you have weeds in your lawn, weed seeds, they won't germinate. And this, I just learned about this not recently, and I thought about buying some, and I just was unable to for a while. And now this has come up, so I'm rather curious.
Oh, that's a real good question. I had not heard of corn gluten being used on your lawns either. Well, my guess is that the amount that you would use on your lawn is so low. I mean, the amount that a cat would be exposed to would be so low that it wouldn't harm your cat, would be my best guess on this. All of the cases we've had so far are cats eating the food that has the contaminated wheat gluten or corn gluten in it. And so they would be getting a much, much higher dose, and it would be directly put into their body because they're eating it. And so my best guess is that the amount of corn gluten that you might put on your lawn, that your cats would actually eat very, very little of that. And so I don't think there would be a problem, unless we do find out that it's like 10% melamine or something. In which case, we'd have to reconsider.
Yeah. Do we know how much melamine was used? In other words, how much of the corn gluten had melamine added to it, or do we not know that?
What I saw in one report was that there were some samples of the wheat gluten that they tested that was up to like 6.5% melamine.
Really?
In some of them. Yeah, that's a lot.
Wow.
That's a lot. I mean, so even after you diluted down. I mean, they did take that wheat gluten and then mixed it in with other ingredients to make the cat foods. But even so, I mean, they're still talking about quite a bit in the final product there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So this might, and do we know if this was also added to this product that you'd spread on your lawn?
Ooh, that I have no idea.
Yeah.
I mean, as things are going through my head here, you wonder if that it could be added to the lawn, because then you would put in some melamine to add it as fertilizer.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And have a combination product. And so if they're doing that, I think they need to relook at that and reconsider that a little bit.
Right.
But even so, you know, the total dose that an animal's going to get would be pretty low unless they ate a bag of it, in which case that would be bad.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you very much for being with us, Professor.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
Thank you. Professor Stephen Hooser, Associate Professor of Toxicology, Head of the Toxicology Section, and Assistant Director of the Animal Disease Diagnostic Laboratory, Diplomat at the American Board of Veterinary Toxicology School. This is a long title. School of Veterinary Medicine at Purdue University. We're going to continue our conversation. We're going to be talking the next part of the program with Dr. Elka Rudloff, Director of Education at the Animal Emergency Center, which is located here in Milwaukee, about how pet owners are dealing with this, what recommendations the doctor has for feeding your cats and dogs. There has been some concern, and I think an announcement by the American Veterinary Medical Association, because a lot of people started making homemade pet food, that pets have complex nutritional needs that are unique to their species and age. Changes to a pet's diet can cause intestinal upset. So what should we be doing with our dogs and our cats? We'll be talking about that and welcoming more phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. A couple lines are open. 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee line is 414-227-2050. 414-227-2050. Tomorrow during this time period, we'll be speaking with the author of The Lucifer Effect, Understanding How Good People Turn Evil. Our guest, Professor Philip Zimbardo, is a professor emeritus of psychology at Stanford University, and he was the creator of the Stanford Prison Experiment, which was quite controversial. I think it happened back in 1971. He explains why we are all susceptible to the lure of the dark side. He looks at examples from history as well as from his own trailblazing research, and he is... as I said, the creator of the Stanford Prison Experiment. A group of college student volunteers randomly divided into guards and inmates and then placed in a mock prison environment. Within a week, they had to abandon the study because ordinary students were really transformed into either brutal, sadistic guards or emotionally broken prisoners. He has a very keen understanding of what happened at Abu Ghraib, and he says that that experiment taught him was that there are psychological causes behind such disturbing metamorphoses, and he looks at Abu Ghraib and replaces the long-held notion of the bad apple with that of the bad barrel, the idea that social setting and the system contaminate the individual rather than the other way around. So that should be an interesting conversation tomorrow during this time period. All right, we continue now. What are individual pet owners doing about the food? How can we be reassured that the food supply is safe? Dr. Elka Rudloff, Director of Education at the Animal Emergency Center, located here in Milwaukee on Silver Spring Drive, is our guest, and we'll be welcoming more phone calls. Dr. Rudloff, hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
Sure.
Are you aware that a lot of pet owners have been just given up on buying this food at all, and they're just cooking their own kind of pet food for their dogs and cats?
Well, it's been a question I've been asked of pet owners, and I've even thought of myself. It can be a frustrating thing to know what is the right thing to do to keep your pet healthy.
Right, it is. Is it the right thing to do to just give up on this food or not?
Well, for a short term, you can cook a good diet for your pet. You want to involve your veterinarian in the decision-making process. Number one, a lot of the home-cooked diets are not going to be nutritionally complete, and for a long period of time can actually, they can develop deficiencies in their diet of certain minerals and things that they might need, particularly if they have health problems. For the short term, it's probably not a big issue, but if you do decide to move that way, the best thing to do is, number one, talk to your veterinarian about your pet specific needs, and then possibly having a consultation with a veterinary nutrition specialist who can help formulate a diet that is complete for your pet and contains the proper nutrients if you go that way.
Yeah. Are you feeling comfortable in recommending certain brands of food that couldn't possibly become contaminated? Can we do that or can we not do that because we don't know?
Well, it seems that the general consensus is that the toxin is a toxin called melamine, and it's found in wheat protein sources coming out of China. That's the general consensus. So obviously there's always new things developing. And most of the pet food companies, particularly the more well-known research companies, are doing testing on their own products and recalling foods that are not associated with illness, but they're finding that particular toxin in them. And they are being very diligent about recalling and listing those products. Mm. And so following that list, I think, is the best thing we can all do and stick with the reputable companies.
Is there some reason that we have to go all the way to China to get these kinds of ingredients for dog and cat food? I guess the question also is, they're buying some of these elements and then they're mixing the feed once they get to the United States?
Is it necessary to go all the way to China? I don't know the answer to that question. Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is that with the foods, the different ingredients that are used, and it can be a complicated process on how they try to make it taste good as well as be nutritionally complete. So there's sources that they can go that are not from China.
Yeah. What do you make of the reports over the last few days that spiking the food with melamine elevates the measured protein levels so it makes the food worth more money? The intent here was not to kill animals, but the intent was to make more money.
I have no comment to that. I'm not aware of that.
And what about other kinds of chemicals that might be added to foods? Obviously, people love their cats and dogs, and they are very concerned about other kinds of chemicals that might be in the pet food supply right now. Are we going to see massive testing now of all of the companies to find out what the makeup is of food or not?
I think that, pet food is regulated different than food that's put out for human consumption. And the regulations being different, I think, you know, there's probably chances for more problems to happen. I think that because of this particular issue and the recall being as great as it is going to spark interest in looking at the safety measures used to test foods that we give to our pets. I think it's a good thing, obviously. I think there's needs to be regulation to not contaminate our pets and in the foods that we give them, and that's really the job of the FDA to do that, and I think that's going to start happening.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to some phone calls for you. Our lines are all filled. We start with Arlene from Milwaukee. Hi, Arlene.
Hi. I called my pet foods suppliers, and I called Inova, which I feed my cats and dogs. They do not buy any ingredients outside of the United States. Except from New Zealand, they buy sheep for their sheep additive, and that is tested when it comes into the United States. The problem is that these people want to make a large profit on what they sell the people, and that is what is causing this. It's just a profit greed margin, and I really feel that everybody should call their pet food company, find out if they're getting things from outside of the United States where they're not regulated, and stop buying that food until they go to our suppliers inside the United States. And then secondly, with the human consumption of spinach and everything else like that, they've passed laws in Europe where you cannot have a farm with animals within so many miles of a farm with human vegetables because of the fact that the animals contaminate those vegetables with their urine and feces.
Mm-hmm.
And also the testing of the water when you're raising huge amounts of dairy cattle, feed cattle, and pigs and chickens and such, that goes into our water. I think everybody should quit eating meat so consistently, and we're going to have a much healthier, happier people than we do now. And that's my
That's your input. Comment.
That's my comment.
Thanks, Arlene, for the call. Dr. Rudloff, let's start with a comment about buying pet food that's totally made in the United States. Is that a good recommendation, and is that possible?
Again, I think that there are sources from a lot of different places. I don't know that you can necessarily guarantee that one source is going to be less toxic or not be not the potential to be exposed to a problem is going to be wherever you get your food from. There has to, I think, It has to come from a regulatory level of the FDA where they set certain standards or change the standards for pet food ingredients. And then it, if the standards are changed, then where it comes from is really not going to matter because those pet standards have to be maintained. I think quality of food also, I think there are certain companies that attempt to limit the cost to the consumers, and they might use a source of or an additive from a less expensive producer to keep the cost down for the consumer as well. Mm-hmm. So there's two sides to that. Although all companies, it seems, are being in some way exposed to this issue.
Yeah. Can you give us an idea of how many people, I would imagine, you know, if my dog got sick, I would immediately think that he had eaten bad food, because obviously it's all over the news right now. I would imagine that a lot of vets' offices all over the country have been getting calls from people whose animals are sick, and they suspect that it might be food, and they're in a panic about this. Can you address that?
Yes. I think that everybody is good at being vigilant. I think that the news has been very good at keeping this out in the media, and that veterinarians are being alerted as well as to where they can get information and the public can get information. I think it's really important to understand that when a pet is sick, that the first thing that the pet owner needs to do is to stop feeding the food, mm-hmm. and then contact somebody, a veterinarian, about their pet, because in our hospital, for example, the incidence of kidney failure, which is what this particular toxin is associated with, the incidence of kidney failure is not increasing dramatically at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so although it's an important thing that has harmed animals, it doesn't seem to be on the grand scale, in our area at least, that we're seeing such a dramatic rise in pets being diagnosed with kidney failure. So what that means is that if your pet is sick, don't panic. Still contact a veterinary profession and have them evaluated, particularly if they're feeling sick. If there's just a suspicion or you see that that there's a pet food now that's described what you're feeding your own pet that's having, that has been shown to have evidence of the toxin in it, have your pet tested for kidney problems and examined. And do it more rapidly if they're feeling sick.
Mm-hmm. We are going to welcome more phone calls. Our guest this half hour is Dr. Elka Rudloff, Director of Education at the Animal Emergency Center located here in Milwaukee. Our number is 800-486-8655, 227-2050 if you're in Milwaukee. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls, more of them, and to Pat from Wauwatosa. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Kathleen. I want to suggest that maybe there's a broader economic issue involved in the poison in the pet food. In August of 2006, the AP reported that China killed 50,000 dogs. It did this in response to fewer than a dozen outbreaks of rabies in the country, and it expressed a continued interest in killing dogs. And it did so in a brutal way. It grabbed dogs away from their owners on the streets, and it clubbed them to death. And this sparked the outrage of animal rights around the world, who tried to institute boycotts of Chinese products. And I think that as a public relations, perhaps the Chinese government decided to put toxins in ingredients that go into pet food so that it wouldn't be so obvious what it was doing. It did express a desire to continue killing more than the 50,000 dogs, and this was 8 months ago. So I really wonder what's at the bottom of this. If the Chinese government was trying to avoid obvious boycotts, there was a great economic incentive in doing that.
Yeah, but look at what happens to the money they're losing if somebody deliberately put this toxin in food for export.
Well, what goes around comes around, perhaps. It backfired, perhaps.
Do you want to comment on that?
I guess that I think that I would have to agree with you that the economic impact of affecting the food products outside of China is probably more important to them than that.
Right. Thanks very much for the call. Can you tell me, do you have any indication, now I'm rather unclear as to how many animals in this country have died as a result of this, and if it's being underreported, or I had heard that there were websites where there were people who had listed the sickness and sometimes death of their dogs and cats, and we haven't any official numbers on this. Is this a larger thing than we think, Dr. Rudloff?
I think that, number one, we're finding that being able to specifically connect a toxin with a patient's illness is somewhat difficult to do unless the pet has passed away, mm-hmm. which then testing of the tissue can do and levels of the melamine can be looked for. Mm. The reported deaths that have been linked directly to the melamine, my understanding is still relatively low, up to 20 cases, but the actual number of illnesses assumed to be due to the melamine is much, hundreds to thousands potentially of numbers that are coming in. And the American Association of Veterinary Laboratory Diagnosticians are trying to collect data to try to better determine how many animals potentially were affected or are affected.
Mm-hmm. So it's much larger than what we know definitely.
I think the illness is probably more of an issue in live animals than ones that are actually expiring, although it doesn't minimize the fact that those died.
Right. So how do you treat if an animal's been exposed? How can you treat the animal to keep him or her alive?
Yes. We would approach it as for any cause of kidney failure. And that is to basically support the kidney. And that's done with fluid therapy and medications for nausea and making sure that we're not overlooking other causes of kidney failure like antifreeze toxicity or an infection or a kidney stone. And so we want to, encourage pet owners to do complete evaluation to make sure that we are treating the proper problem.
Mm-hmm.
And in very severe cases, we can do dialysis, but for the most part, of the cases, a few cases that we've seen that we think there was a link between the toxin, the pets have done relatively well. The pet owners have brought them in early in their illness process.
Yeah. Let's go to Sarah from Pell Lake. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, thank you. The first thing I'm going to do is give you some websites. I'm in the pet industry, but not in the nutrition part of it. And I've got two great websites that I always tell people to go to check out what foods they can eat and what foods they can't eat. The first one are foods that they can eat. It's petfitusa.com. And she has a list of all the foods, and she's really good about – her name's Teresa. She's a list person for this, and she's real good about keeping up with this. It's a website that's for people to find pet sitters and various other things, but she's been phenomenal at keeping up on all the recalls. The list of foods not to eat is on the American Veterinary Medical Association website, and I think it's amva.org.
Do you know what that website is, Dr. Rudloff?
Yes, it's avma.org.
Okay.
And they've been real good about keeping up with all the recalls they have. I've printed out, they have about 17 pages of food recalls.
Wow.
And they've been real good about keeping up with all the recalls on that. The second thing is they're having problems with what you're talking about with linking the animals with the food, because according to Menu Foods, in order to link the animals to the food, you have to, A, have the food sample available, B, have gone through a necropsy for the animal, and C, had the tissue sample taken.
Mm-hmm.
So they haven't had that many people able to do it, because when this all came out in March, any animal that died before that, you're not going to have a lot of your food samples. But what Bainfield is saying, and they're part of PetSmart, I believe, they've compiled some of their stuff, and they're saying that they could have as many as 39,000 animals that they've seen that have gotten sick from this. That's just what Bainville is saying. And then the last thing is they came out with natural balance just with the recall. They said that it was a salicylic acid that they found, which is very close to melamine. And I was wondering if your guest had any comments on that and what that is, or if that was actually a marker, because a lot of people thought that melamine might be a marker, and if this was the marker that melamine was
okay. Marking. All right, Dr. Rudloff?
I'm unaware of that particular toxin or related to it. It wasn't a toxin that had come up in any recent information from my veterinary sources.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you're saying salicylic acid, that's similar to what's in aspirin, but I think they can test for the melamine in the tissues in the urine.
She gave us a couple websites. Where do you think we should all go for information about this, Dr. Rudloff?
Where I go is the American Veterinary Medical Association website first.
Okay.
And they have links for veterinarians as well as pet owners, and they are sort of the clearinghouse for veterinarians because it's the national organization for veterinarians.
Mm-hmm.
And they, like your guest caller said, they have a very complete list of the pet foods and any company who is trying to get their any information out about a recall is going to let the AVMA know. And then they have a group of veterinarians that are critically looking at the results of some of the studies coming out and for veterinarians making us aware of the clinical things that they're finding and the pathological changes to look for, and then also how to submit samples or cases if we find that there is a potential.
We have time for a couple more phone calls. 800-486-8655, 227-2050. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, and our guest this half hour is Dr. Elka Rudloff, Director of Education at the Animal Emergency Center based here in Milwaukee. We're talking about, when you might suspect dog food or cat food being a problem with your pet's illness, how to diagnose that, and how big a problem this may be. And we thank you very much for the call. We go next to Bernie from Manitowoc. Hi, Bernie.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I believe I can give you a very short explanation as to why the melamine is in this stuff. I'm an ex-dairy farmer, and I had a dog that died, and I can't prove that she died from that poisoning, but it kind of set me on a path of doing some investigation. And I was tipped off by a blog at petconnection.com to go look at the Anying Biologic website. And I started reading the advertisements for the products that this company makes. And I kept seeing a couple of terms over and over again that I instantly recognized from large animal feeds, which are NPN, which stands for non-protein nitrogen, and continual references to slow release. This is still out there if anybody wants to go and verify it. Typically, NPN has meant urea. You add urea to the feed for ruminants so that they can construct additional protein out of the available nitrogen. It forms ammonia in the gut. But this is typically not done for non-ruminants. It was always considered toxic to things like pigs, and now we see one story about pigs dying on one hog farm where they tested positive for melamine. What I didn't know until I did a little research is that, because I've been out of farming for a number of years, is that the current technology in NPN is to encapsulate urea in melamine. Melamine is actually made from urea and formaldehyde. And they use this like a little bit of a wrapper on the urea granule, so it releases more slowly in the cow's gut and can make better use of it. When you see those terms together, you have to be thinking, you know, if they say it's non-protein nitrogen, it almost has to be urea. And if they're talking about slow release effect, it almost has to be encapsulated in.
All right. I'm sorry. We are out of time. We have about 10 seconds for a response. Dr. Rudloff?
I think that the melamine, my understanding was it was actually used as a fertilizer on the products to make a protein additive.
Mm-hmm. And thank you so much for being with us. Our guest this half hour, Dr. Elke Rudloff, Director of Education for the Animal Emergency Center based here in Milwaukee. The website she recommends is avma.org. Thanks also to Professor Stephen Hooser, Associate Professor of Toxicology, and he's in the School of Veterinary Medicine at Purdue University. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour and to Rhonda as well for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. And thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. I'm Kathleen Dunn. News coming up from National Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.